Welcome to Music History Monday for October 12th, 2020. I'm Bob Greenberg, and the title of today's podcast is, And Please Don't Call Me Ralph. To sample and download one or all of my many courses on subjects musical produced by The Great Courses / The Teaching Company, please visit my website at robertgreenbergmusic.com. We mark the birth on October 12, 1872, 148 years ago today, of the English composer, conductor, folk song collector, and teacher, Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, pronounced Ralph, Vaughan Williams, in the village of Down Ampney in the Cotswold district of Gloucester, 75 miles west of London. He died in London at the age of 85 on August 26, 1958. A confession. I came to the music of Ralph Vaughan Williams fairly late in my life. Oh yeah, sure, like most of us, I had heard his greatest hits. There was a time that when listening to a classical radio station, you couldn't go a day without hearing one of them. The Fantasia, on a theme by Thomas Tallis of 1910, The Lark Ascending of 1914, and his Fantasia on Greensleeves, 1934. But it wasn't until I was researching and writing my teaching company / Great Courses survey, The Symphony, which was recorded in October 2003, that I made a comprehensive study of his works, in this case, his symphonies. I was floored. And not for the first time, and I pray to heaven not for the last, I experienced revelation. This fantastic repertoire, this whole new world of wonderful music that had been there the whole time, right under my nose, was now mine for the experience and the taking. Generally speaking, and with noted exceptions like Gustav Holst's The Planets and Edward Elgar's Enigma Variations, English music gets short shrift in the United States. Over time, we will do what we can to remedy that. 2 weeks ago, we celebrated Gustav Holst. This week, Vaughan Williams. In the near future, my Dr. Bob Prescribes post will tackle the Piano Concerto in E-flat Major, 1930, of John Ireland, 1879 to 1962, and from there, we'll see where things go. Ralph Vaughan Williams was a big, bluff, lantern-jawed bear of a man whose thin lips and long nose gave him the forbidding look of an English parson. Little surprise, really, given that he was the son of a vicar, the Reverend Arthur Vaughan Williams, 1834 to 1875. Bluff, Ralph Vaughan Williams may have been, but forbidding, he was certainly not. He was, in fact, as admirable a man as any to have ever put pen to manuscript paper. A highly moral, socially progressive man, meaning a liberal, he had a deep and abiding belief in music as a moral tool and civilizing force, something that should be available to anyone and everyone. Writing in the New Grove Dictionary of Music and Musicians, Hugh Ottaway explains. His outlook was human and social. He never forgot that music was for people. He was interested in every situation, however humble, for which music was needed, and his feelings for genuinely popular traditions amounted to a reverence that was almost religious. Throughout a public life of more than 60 years, Vaughan Williams engaged in a wide range of musical activities, sometimes of a kind that many lesser composers would have considered beneath them. Unquote. For example, Vaughan Williams invested a tremendous amount of his creative time and energy composing works for amateurs and students. He freely gave his time and support to a wide variety of English musical organizations and educational institutions, from the most prestigious to the humblest, offered a knighthood, he turned it down. Offered the post of Master of the King's Music in 1935 after the death of Edward Elgar, he turned it down. The only state honor he was willing to accept was the Order of Merit, abbreviated as OM, which conferred no prenominal title. To his dying day, Vaughan Williams preferred to be known simply as Dr. Vaughan Williams. The doctor was not an honorific. He earned a doctorate in music from Cambridge in 1901. For our information, in a letter to his friend, the composer Rutland Boughton, Vaughan Williams explained why he accepted the Order of Merit. Quote, "I have always refused all honors and appointments which involved obligation to anyone in authority. The OM involved no such obligation." Unquote. Vaughan Williams was particularly enamored of a quote by the German statesman Gustav Ernst Stresemann, 1878 to 1929, who served as the Chancellor of the Weimar Republic in 1923 and was co-laureate of the Nobel Peace Prize in 1926. It is a quote that described Vaughan Williams himself to the proverbial T. Quote, "The man who serves humanity best is he who, rooted in his own nation, develops his moral and spiritual endowments to their highest capacity, so that growing beyond the limits of his own nation, he is able to give something to the whole of humanity." Unquote. According to his second wife, Ursula, Vaughan Williams was, quote, "a cheerful agnostic," unquote, a nonconformist who believed in humanity. He was the youngest of three children born to a well-to-do and well-connected family. His father, Reverend Arthur Vaughan Williams, came from a line of eminent lawyers and judges. His mother, Margaret, 1842 to 1937, born Wedgwood, was the great-granddaughter of Josiah Wedgwood, who created that wonderful line of English sculptural pottery that today bears his name. She was, as well, a niece of Charles Darwin. The Reverend Vaughan Williams died in 1875 when Rafe was just 3 years old. The family pulled up stakes and moved to Margaret's family home in Dorking, 21 miles south of London. Dorking. It is George Bernard Shaw who is credited with having said that, quote, "The United States and Great Britain are two countries separated by a common language," unquote. Yeah, when it comes to place names, he wasn't kidding. Dorking. One can only wonder if there are such places in England as Wonking, Dweebish, and Nerdling. For me, it is well nigh impossible to drive through the English countryside without speculating on the possible existence of such towns as Burger on Buns, Nipple on Breast, and Codpiece on whatever. It was in Dorking that Rafe Vaughan Williams grew up. He started piano lessons at 5 and violin lessons at 6. He much preferred the violin. The talent was there, and in September of 1890, the 18-year-old Vaughan Williams matriculated at the Royal College of Music, abbreviated as RCM, in London. His first composition teacher at the RCM was Hubert Parry, who Vaughan Williams adored. Writing in his autobiography in 1950, he recalled, quote, "Parry once said to me, 'Write choral music as befits an Englishman and a Democrat.' We pupils of Parry have, if we have been wise, inherited from him the great English choral tradition, which Tallis passed on to Bird, Bird to Gibbons, Gibbons to Purcell, Purcell to Battishill and Green, and they in their turn through the Wesleys to Parry. He has passed on the torch to us, and it is our duty to keep it alight." Unquote. 2 years at the RCM were followed by 3 years at Trinity College, Cambridge, where Vaughan Williams received a bachelor's degree in music in 1894 and a BA in history in 1895. Then it was back to the RCM to study composition, and finally back again to Cambridge, where he received the degree of Doctor of Music in 1901. While Vaughan Williams recalled his compositional studies fondly, they were not in any way easy. He was a late bloomer, and his progress was slow. A cousin of his on the Darwin side, Gwen Raveratt, recalled while she was at Cambridge, quote, overhearing scraps of conversation about that foolish young man, Ralph Vaughan Williams, who would go on working at music when he was so hopelessly bad at it, unquote. Yeah, there was something to this. Vaughan Williams was dogged by what he considered his amateurish technique for many years. It caused him to travel to Berlin to study with Max Bruch in 1897, despite his growing antipathy towards German music, and to even take lessons with Maurice Ravel in Paris in 1908, when he was already 36 years old and had experienced some success as a composer. Vaughan Williams remembered, quote, in 1908, I came to the conclusion that I was bumpy and stodgy, had come to a dead end, and that a little French polish would be of use to me, unquote. They were an odd couple, the tiny, immaculate Ravel and the big, rumpled, sloppily dressed Ralph Vaughan Williams. Someone once remarked that Vaughan Williams always dressed, quote, as though stalking the folk song to its lair, unquote. Ravel examined some of Vaughan Williams's music and gave him his first assignment, to write a little minuet in the style of Mozart. This went over poorly with Vaughan Williams, who responded, quote, look here, I have given up my time, my work, my friends, and my career to come here and learn from you, and I am not going to write a petit minuet dans le style de Mozart, unquote. And apparently, he did not. However, Vaughan Williams credited his work with Ravel for having guided him away from what he called the heavy, contrapuntal, Teutonic manner. Having finished his work with Ravel, Vaughan Williams felt his education was complete. He returned to London in 1909, and now, fully armed as a composer, began his career. It was a career based preeminently on the spirit and substance of English folk music and the music of Tudor and Stuart England. Tomorrow's Dr. Bob Prescribes post will delve in detail, a detailed delve, into the nature of and reasons behind the German domination of English music during the 18th and 19th centuries. For now, let us note that Vaughan Williams was disgusted by that domination and believed absolutely that English music must turn away from German models and instead capture the spirit of the English nation. This could only be done, he concluded, by first capturing the spirit of English folk music. Along with his great friend, the composer Gustav Holst, the two met at the RCM in 1895, Vaughan Williams began traveling the English countryside in 1903, collecting, that is, transcribing, native folk music in as pure a state as it could be found. In this, Vaughan Williams and Holst were doing exactly what their contemporaries Béla Bartók and Zoltán Kodály were doing in Hungary. Like Bartók, Vaughan Williams immersed himself in the folk music he collected, and the spirit and substance of this English folk music, as well as the music of Tudor and Stuart England, entered into his heart, his mind, his blood, and became the essential substance of his musical language, the accent with which his music spoke. Wrote the man, quote, as long as composers persist in serving up at second hand the externals of the music of other nations, they must not be surprised if audiences prefer the real Brahms, the real Wagner, the real Debussy, the real Stravinsky to their pale reflections. Every composer cannot expect to have a worldwide message, but he may reasonably expect to have a message for his own people, unquote. When we return tomorrow, and Dr. Bob prescribes, we will begin with the German domination of English music, and then move on to the symphonies of Ralph Vaughan Williams, 9 in number, before focusing on his Symphony No. 5 in D major of 1943. For more on the symphonies of Ralph Vaughan Williams, I would direct your attention to my teaching company / Great Courses Survey, The Symphony, which features Vaughan Williams's Symphony No. 6 in Lecture 22. The course can be examined and downloaded at robertgreenbergmusic.com. Thank you. If you haven't already, please consider joining me on my subscription site at patreon.com/robertgreenbergmusic, where I blog, vlog, podcast, pontificate, review, and bloviate 4 to 6 times a week.